How's it going, hockey fans? This is episode 76 of the ClapperCast. It's February 1st, 2021, a new month, same podcast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, how's it going, sir?
You know, I'm doing better than the Vancouver Canucks are tonight, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was illegal to have live murder displayed on TV, which is what the Habs are doing to the Canucks yet again.
Yeah, after that first series, the Habs is kind of dismantling the Canucks at every turn. They took a bit of a break. Vancouver went and got some confidence against Ottawa, a couple of blowout games there. And they go and play the Habs and immediately get brought back down to earth. Like a minute into the game, Nick Suzuki scores and set the tone for the rest of the game. It's, what, about 2 minutes left in the third, and it's 6-2 Habs. So,
oof, yeah. Yeah, the Canucks looked sharp against Ottawa, but that's not exactly a very high bar right now. So kind of, as you mentioned, kind of back down to reality here as they get stomped yet again. And so tough time for the Canucks when they play the Habs. Toffoli with another point, another goal tonight. So it's kind of funny.
Continues the revenge tour.
Yeah. I mean, like with the Senators, they had that opening day win, and then they've just really struggled since. And I mean, they had kind of a scoring duel against the Edmonton Oilers last night, where
that was a stressful experience. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, what even is defense or goaltending, right?
It was like 5 goals in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and Murray got pulled, like, instantly.
7 minutes in, I think, Edmonton scores 3 and Murray gets pulled.
Looking at some of the goals, though, I mean, you can't fault them on all of them, right?
Not at all. Those first three. The Sens defense is, like, a massive block of Swiss cheese. Like, they don't have much going on back there. I mean, the same goes for Edmonton in that game as well. They were just kind of leaving Skinner out to dry in his first NHL start. Bit of a tough one to deal with there on both ends defensively.
Yeah, it. I mean, this is kind of what we touched on when Murray got traded for and then signed in Ottawa. Is that it was a bit of an overpaid, and I remember saying, "Hey, we're gonna suck for a while. We're gonna pay you a little bit extra money to put up with it." And that was kind of one of those nights where he didn't even play the whole game, but it was like, you know what? Let's yoink you. This is just not going to be a great game. And, you know, Hogberg went in and he let up, what, like
another
four or five more. So, yeah, just not a great night for the Senators. But, you know, they did get a few. But, yeah, it's just a tough look. The Oilers, you know, everyone's talking about how McDavid had 5 points and Draisaitl had 6. Mm-hmm. But I think they both finished -1. So it's like, yeah, they're great on special teams, but that defense, though, not great.
Yeah, that's basically what happened last season, too, where most of McDavid and Draisaitl's production, or a significant portion of it anyways, was on special teams, on the power play. So that doesn't affect the plus-minus. Then they go 5v5, and this is an area they've struggled for years, that they're a weak 5v5 versus 5 team, so they end up giving up a lot of goals. And if we impact plus-minus, but then they go on the power play and make up for it in that way. So that's kind of where it balances out. It just doesn't reflect in the score sheet.
Yeah, it's tough look. I mean, a lot of positives for the Oilers coming out of that. I mean, they got their power play going. Tyson Barrie seems to have got his groove back. He's got five points in his last 3 games, so that's a positive for him. He got his first goal as an Oiler.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would have liked to have scored that against the Leafs instead of the Sens, but I'm sure he'll take it.
Dominic Cahoon got his first couple of goals. James Neal got a couple of goals. So, I mean, it's looking good for kind of the midline production if they can get that on a more regular basis. But we'll have to wait and see on that, because that's been a continual issue for this team as well.
Yeah, well, at least it gets some guys going, get them on the board. Kind of Get rid of that, not really a slump, but, you know, like
it's that monkey off the back, right?
Get yourself into it, get the points going a bit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and hopefully for your sake, they don't collapse when they play the Montreal Canadiens next, because apparently if you beat the Senators by a lot, the Habs will just come into town and
well, the Habs dismantled the Oilers in games so. I was like 2 or 2 and 3 this season, so we'll have to wait and see how the rematch goes if the team can figure that out.
Well, we'll see. I'm excited to see really any game that Montreal's playing in. They're really fun to watch.
They are. You know, before the season started, when we were doing our North Division preview, we were talking about how of all of the teams in the North Division, Montreal is the only one that doesn't have question marks on defense or goaltending. And that is really showing in this division with so much offensive firepower, how far that is going to take a team when they have, you know, the forward depth that Montreal has, but also just that defense and the reliable defense and goaltending. You see, like, Ottawa, Vancouver, and Edmonton are all struggling big time in that regard, and it's costing them a lot of games.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can't win games if you're giving up a million breakaways a game. Your defense needs to be solid. You need that great first breakout pass. You need to be able to make smart plays, make the safe play. And I think a lot of those guys on the Habs do that really well. I mean, Shea Weber's made his whole career on that, basically making the safe, smart play. And they've got, you know, Ben Chiarot does kind of the same thing. Petrie is a bit more skill and can, you know, walk the line a bit and all that. And, yeah, they've just got a solid team, and, you know, it's kind of built from the back out, and having Carey Price and Jake Allen is such a luxury. Like you mentioned, they're the one team in Canada where it's kind of like, okay, well, they're set. They're set in the pipes, so, you know, just being able to have confidence in whoever's in net there is amazing, and Jake Allen has just looked really good in the backup role. It's really suiting him. I think it was a really smart move by Bergevin to bring him in there.
Exactly. Like that's like we talked about. That's a struggle that the Habs have had in the past is they don't have anybody to take some of the load off of Carey Price, and Price ends up overworking himself in the regular season and kind of falters down the stretch into the playoffs. So Jake Allen's going to give that rest to Carey Price during the regular season. That's going to lend itself well to making the Habs primed for a deep run in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think Carey Price is a good jumping-off point for kind of the biggest news of the week, and that is the fact that Chris Kreider apparently punched Tony DeAngelo in the face, and it's something that even Habs fans can rally behind Kreider as just a great guy.
Yeah, he's so, captain, you know, give him all the humanitarian awards.
Yeah, so, you know, Kreider's... you know, used to be, you know, enemy number one, public enemy number one in Montreal because of, you know, when he crashed into Carey Price back in, you know, the day. But, you know, that's a long time ago. And, you know, the context of this is really important. So, in case you haven't heard, Tony DeAngelo is he's moved to right wing. And the Rangers have basically had enough, and there was an altercation in the dressing room.
It was in the tunnel.
Reportedly. Where it was kind of spurred on by the fact that there's a miscommunication between Georgiev and DeAngelo in overtime, where Georgiev went to play the puck, and I guess DeAngelo was going for it behind the net. And then you can just see DeAngelo just totally gives up on the play at that point. And the Penguins get it, and Crosby shoots it. And DeAngelo's basically screening his own goalie and doesn't even make a real good attempt to block the shot. Crosby puts it on the ice right by him. And it was kind of a soft goal to let in for Georgiev, sure. But apparently DeAngelo took issue with that and got in his grill after the game. And Kreider stepped up and I guess knocked him down a peg, down to reality. So
I think the Kreider part is still the unconfirmed rumor. The confirmed part is...
Don't ruin it for me, Sean.
The part that we know is more confirmed, coming from like more reliable sources, is that after the game, Georgiev was kind of sitting, kind of doing the sullen, I just lost a game, now I'm kind of pissed off thing. And D'Angelo walked by him in the tunnel or something and made a sarcastic remark or something directed at Georgiev about the play. And that kind of sparked an altercation between the two. And I think it led to Georgiev physically hitting D'Angelo, and then it started an altercation between the two, and then other teammates had to step in. Beyond that, it's still kind of unconfirmed. We don't have the official like video or that apparently exists, or you know, reports from anybody about what happened. But after that started to break out, you know, we've learned today that after the games 2 and 3 of the regular season, when D'Angelo was healthy scratched, D'Angelo couldn't handle it. He wouldn't get over it. And he was told by the organization or by the coach or someone that, you know, this is your last straw, basically. You don't have another shot. Like, if you make another issue, you're gone or you're done. And this altercation was that last straw, so he got waived. Today, the Rangers DM came out and said, like, this, he's played his last game as a Ranger. You know, he's done their, he went unclaimed on waivers. Now they're just looking for, you know, I'm assuming a trade partner. I genuinely hope that nobody takes him or his contract, but we'll have to wait and see on that part.
Yeah, he's like, what, 6 games into a brand new contract? Yeah. Way to go, Tony. I'm just looking at some tweets here, and apparently Keandre Miller was the player who broke up the altercation between Georgiev and D'Angelo. And I'm just looking at the top comments here on Reddit by a guy named Visible Ducks. And it says, Keandre continuing to prove that he is far superior at defending his goalie than D'Angelo. So shout out to that guy for a solid comment. But, you know, it sounds like there was also some issues between D'Angelo and Keandre Miller. And, you know, Keandre Miller happens to be a black player. And apparently there was some people who felt really uneasy about, you know, D'Angelo's opinions. I don't know. There's nothing confirmed or anything.
Yeah, nothing
but
about that part is confirmed. Keandre Miller's side and, like, his agent, they're kind of all refuting that part, that there was no actual issues between them. So, you know, we're still kind of waiting to see if more comes out. But, you know, it seems like this might be a case of where there's smoke, there's fire, where there might be something there. It just might not be what we think it is or the extent we think it is.
Yeah, and, you know, it allegedly caused a bit of a rift in the locker room. Not even a rift, it's just one. I think everybody was just against one person. And Tony D'Angelo has a track record of kind of being on the wrong side of things like this.
It's not kind of, he is on the wrong side. There is no kind of in there.
Yes, yes. He was on the wrong side back in his OHL days too, where he got in some situations that were very similar. And so, you know, we don't want to, of course, accuse anything with no basis in reality. But, you know, when you have a track record of being, let's not, let's not be too nice here. If you've got a track record of being a piece of shit, you know, sometimes that reputation precedes you, and it leads people to judging you on that. And he's done really nothing to prove that he isn't. And so, you know, props for the Rangers to kind of saying, you know, if Gorton apparently said, you know, like, if I hear your name come up, anything about you being a healthy scratch, you know, you're done. And then Gorton has a quote saying, like, I had to stick up to my word here. And, you know,
yeah, exactly.
If you're not going to be a team player, we don't want you on our team. And so they're trying to find a trade for him. And, of course, his agent definitely thinks that there's a trade option available. But, you know, right now, when there's, you know, so much going on with the taxi squad and COVID and all that sort of stuff, you know, who's going to really want to take a shot at a guy who's causing rifts in the locker room and has all this weird rumors about him and stuff, you know, and especially with the contract that he has and what he provides on ice. His on ice performance this year hasn't exactly been great. So,
yep.
I don't know if this really
gonna
take a shot at him.
That's a perfect segue into this tweet here that I'm looking at from Evolving Wild, that the Rangers kept D'Angelo on their roster for years because, frankly, he was a valuable defenseman. Despite all of his serious and problematic issues, they committed to him because they only cared about his on-ice impact. This is how the NHL works, and it's a major problem. Now, D'Angelo's on-ice impact last year was pretty all right. You know, he's a solid offensive defenseman, you know, top five in the league in points and for defenders. This year, he sucks, and suddenly, you know, his on-ice impact is no longer, you know, protecting his reputation and actual actions of being a garbage person. And, you know, that's kind of the final straw there.
You know, time to move on. And I was telling you, Sean, that I hope he gets, I was hoping he got claimed by a team in California so that he would have to live in the most liberal place in the U.S. And yeah, I think that'd be funny. Or heaven forbid that he gets claimed by some Canadian team and then has to come up to the socialist utopia that is Canada and has to deal with COVID, you know, and all that sort of stuff, getting through the border. That would have just been funny. But, you know, I'm also glad that no Canadian teams claimed him.
I genuinely hope that no team acquires him because he has completely worn out his welcome through his entire career of not learning from his mistakes, from his, you know, issues. Like, he has never shown any ability to change or reflect on his past actions and change himself to be a better person. And he's now been shown the door from three different NHL organizations in, like, what, 5 years since he's been drafted? You know, that's how many chances do you get?
Yeah, well, maybe he can call up Brendan Leipzig's agent and hop on a plane over to Russia and, you know, play in the most conservative, one of the most conservative places on the planet in Russia.
You laugh, but Tony's alleged burner account on Twitter now follows the KHL. That was a new discovery in the last couple of days.
No, I mean, it would perfectly make sense if he goes to the KHL because I think the NHL is really, you know, especially after the Mitchell Miller thing. Like, you know, we don't know what's going on with Tony D'Angelo. We don't know the whole story. But after the shit that hit the fan with that Mitchell Miller thing, you know, like, I think teams really kind of woke up to be like, we can't be silent on this anymore. And, like, you know, we kind of got to live up to that on and off ice
exactly.
Isn't both important.
Like, the thing is, these players are public figures and they are representing these organizations, and organizations do not and should not be okay with people like Tony D'Angelo, who very openly support dangerous and harmful ideas. They shouldn't be okay with, you know, giving them a platform and giving them, you know, the ability to represent that organization. That's not good, and it's kind of neglecting the fact that, you know, they are hockey players. That's their main job, but, you know, they are also public figures. You know, they're role models for kids. They're, you know, supposed to be community members, community heroes, doing lots of, you know, community work and charity work and stuff like that. And you have players like D'Angelo and, you know, spreading his harmful ideas, and it's just really, it's really harmful and a really bad look for an organization, for a league that's needing to make changes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not about his political beliefs like he would probably say. It's just about being a dirtbag and a bad teammate and a bad locker room presence, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're just bad for the team overall. You're bad for the players. You're bad for the fans. Like, you're just
the perfect kind of,
it's not great.
You know, build off of that. Like, it's not about his political beliefs. It's about how he acts as a teammate and how he treats other people. You've got guys like Seth Jones, you know, Zach Werenski, Max Domi. You've got other players who have similar beliefs, but they're not issues because they don't seem to be, you know, bad people in the locker room. They're not bad teammates from the sounds of anything. Like, they can get along with players, with other teammates, and they're not, you know, openly spreading hate to other people, you know?
Yeah. Like, you can still be a good teammate and have whatever political beliefs. You don't, you know, you can keep that separate. And it's just like, you don't talk work, Like, you don't talk politics or religion at work, right? Like, and when you're a public figure, whenever you mention it, people are going to tie it to the team that you work with and your teammates and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, yeah, it's just a dirt bag, and, you know, however much media he gets is too much. He's really kind of, he's earned the Brendan Leipzig treatment, I think. And, you know, I'm sure he'll go to some Russian team and experience what the joys of the KHL is. And, you know, all the best in his career, but, yeah, weird guy. Hopefully he can turn it around and learn from this, but from his burner account, I think it's safe to say that he won't.
Yeah, from his burner account and the other 7 times he's had the same type of issue come up with getting suspended from his own team and getting traded and sent out of other organizations, and I don't think he's going to learn.
Yeah. No. So I guess I think that this is ultimately a good thing for the Rangers. It'll probably bring the locker room together. You know, they've got some bright young players that are ready to have already basically taken his spot.
Yeah.
And so, it'll allow them to not have any sort of controversy about, yeah, this guy's in the lineup and this guy's not. It's, you know, you've played your last game as a Ranger. Bye. We've decided that,
yeah,
you're replaceable. And so I think, yeah, like I said, I think it'll bring the room together, and they won't have that distraction of this guy spouting off and making it all about him.
Yeah, and like, this is a pivotal year for the Rangers in that locker room, in that culture, because this is their first year without Henrik Lundqvist. You know, longtime Ranger, kind of the rallying point for the team. They lost Mark Stahl to trade in the offseason as well, and that's like 2 central figures, veteran figures in that locker room that are gone. And suddenly there's this leadership void, there's a culture void, and, you know, to have the chance to kind of bring everybody together and give them something to bond over, something to move forward together on, and, you know, a moment like, you know, banding together, you know, could be a good, propulsion forward for the team, for the, you know, next leadership group of the Rangers.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Could be a huge moment for the team moving forward. You know, they've had some guys with some slow starts, and maybe this is just kind of the thing to get over the drama and to focus on hockey and getting better and improving and battling every night and not worrying about how somebody in the press box is dealing with it. And, you know, that person's gone now, and let's move on. Let's play hockey and stop talking about healthy scratches. And put Jack Johnson in once he's not hurt anymore. And also, yeah, shout out to Sidney Crosby for ending a man's career, basically. he's the hero of New York. Yeah.
The hero the hockey world needed.
by absolutely walking a defenseman in overtime.
Defenseman in air quotes.
Yeah, I guess actually Matt Barzal walked him in like game 1.
Yeah,
too,
well, Matt Barzal sent him to the taxi squad, and Crosby ended his career.
Yeah. So he can rest easy knowing that 2 Canadians just absolutely ended his career. It wasn't anything to do with him. It was just, you know, these 2 Canadian guys that embarrassed him. He didn't embarrass himself. It was other guys, other people. Their fault. Yeah, let's move on from Tony D. I wanted to mention just kind of how Zdeno Chara has been fitting in with the Capitals. And he scored his first goal against the Islanders in a game where the Islanders were up 3-0 going into the second period. And the Capitals scored 5 goals in the second in the span of like 3 minutes or something crazy. and Chara got a goal. He also got an assist in that period. And he scored from the point, and he was on the side where the Capitals bench was. And when he scored, he went to the bench, and he just got, like, absorbed into a mass of people celebrating. And if you haven't seen the video or the GIF or anything, you should watch it, because it's so heartwarming. Trust me, you don't have to be a Capitals fan to enjoy it. It's just such a cool moment where you can see how happy everybody is, and just kind of what he means to the team, and how well he's been, like, adopted into the club and the franchise. And it's really quite cute. And he actually scored against Boston tonight too, which was awesome. I'm sure that meant a lot to him to score against them. Chara, like, he's just kind of like the team dad. And you know, Ovechkin was out, Kuznetsov was out, Orlov was out, Samsonov was out, and the team got 7 out of 8 possible points while those guys were out. And Lars Eller was out for a couple games, and Tom Wilson was out, and the team just did so well. And I'm not saying it's all Chara, but just how happy the team was when he scored it. It's just like he must fit in so well.
Yeah,
it's so awesome.
I mean, you hear stories about Chara over throughout the years, and you always get the story where people talk about how, like, he's such, like, a not a dominating presence, but he takes on, like, an immediate leadership aura to himself, where it's like he walks into a room and people just listen to him. And you know, you hear other players say, like, he was basically like a player coach throughout his days, even in his younger years. So I can imagine walking into a locker room like the Capitals, where they've got this, you know, this really tight knit and fun group of people, where, you know, they're going to be, like, more than welcoming to have this, you know, legendary defender of this generation walk in, and, you know, he's part of the team now, and they're just going to welcome him right in. So, like you said, it's just an amazing moment to see how happy they all were for him when he scores that first goal. And just, you know, there's just so much exuberance from everybody on the bench that that he got that marker out of the way.
Yeah, and there was a video that came out during training camp of Kuznetsov borrowing his sticks, and I think Kuznetsov was mic'd up, and he was just asking about his stick, and they were skating around, and Chara was just talking to him about it, like, oh yeah, you can custom order it, like, with this sort of, like, grip and sort of stuff. And Kuzi was just playing around with, like, this giant stick, just having a laugh. But you know, Chara was, like, telling him about, like, yeah, you can order this, blah, 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 blah. And he was just, like, taking the time to talk to him and, like, get to know him. And it was just such a legend. And, you know, you mentioned, like, the kind of the stories about him. And I always remember a story where he was at the Olympics. And I think it was the Vancouver Olympics. And I don't remember what context, if it was arriving at the airport or leaving the airport or something like that. But he happened to be, like, close to Henrik Zetterberg, and Zetterberg had, like, you know, notorious back issues, and Chara ended up, like, carrying his bag for him. Like,
that's, yeah,
because, like, he saw him, like, struggling with it or something, and was just like, let me just grab this for you. And, like, they're not teammates, they're not from the same country, they, you know, they're competitors, but he just had that respect for him, and he's just such a good guy. And I'm just happy that he's part of the team, and that he's fitting in, and that, you know, he's still contributing and a valuable member of the team. And, you know, it's always cool to see guys who are such warriors, and, you know, they're in their 40s and they're still a valuable member of the team. Yeah. And he's doing really well. And
he was quarterbacking the power play today too, I think. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw him.
Yeah, he's just a legend. So, like,
that's incredible what he's still able to do in a league that's continually getting younger.
Yeah, and he's blasts it like 100 miles per hour. Another guy that I was skeptical about was Justin Schultz, and he actually was playing really well when he was in the lineup. When the team had all those guys out, Schultz was really good. He ended up taking a puck to the face and hasn't been in since, but he looked really good. And it was really surprising to me. I was kind of skeptical about his signing, and like, the Capitals were playing with, pardon me, both him and Carlson on the power play when Ovechkin was out, and it worked. It really worked. And so happy that the team is clicking and doing so well. And that in that game where Chara got his first, just battling back to score 5 goals in a period when you just, you know, had nothing going in the first was just amazing to see.
It's a further testament to the 3-goal lead being the safest lead in hockey. Good.
Yes. I think it must have been Laviolette, you know, he must have just sparked the boys or something, because there's times when the Capitals would not battle back like that. And I think that's, you know, it's some of the times it comes down to coaching, just being able to inspire the guys to go out there and get something going and to, you know, keep playing our game. Don't change it. Just keep playing our game and, you know, put pucks on the net. And I love to see that. I thought that they really needed that. And also Ovechkin being out and all these core guys being out has really brought the guys together, I think. And so it's cool to see as a fan of the team and just as a hockey fan, just, you know, when you're basically at 50% of the salary cap and you're still winning games, it's pretty awesome. I love it.
So on the note of teams doing well, I wanted to switch over to the Florida Panthers real quick, because they're actually having a really solid start to the season here, especially considering the division that they're in and the troubles that their division have had with games being postponed. They're undefeated in regulation, if I remember correctly. They're sitting at, you know, the top of the Central Division.
Yeah, they're kind of on a sneaky start to the season because they had a bunch of games postponed that weren't because of them. And so they've kind of flown under the radar a little bit at how good
I looked earlier today and paid attention. I'd never realized they were actually still, you know, they're not first in the league in points, but they're their highest points percentage in the league, sitting at 5-0-1 right now. So, you know, they're still the only undefeated team in regulation. And, you know, they're playing well. And this is, you know, like I said, in a division that they weren't supposed to really be able to compete against Tampa Bay and Dallas.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of their games, but I know that they've split up their usual top line of Barkov, Huberto, and who else is on that line?
I don't actually know.
Usually, oh, I guess Dadonov would have been on that line, they've got Duclair and Barkov and Carter Verhaeghe playing together. And then I think Huberto's on the second line. And I'm not sure who he's playing with, but you know, they've had to split it up. And they had that whole thing with Yandel at the beginning of the season. They didn't know if he was going to play and if he's going to be scratched. And it's kind of a lot of drama around that. But you know, they're playing really well. And I think they're rolling both Driedger and Bob right now. So it's kind of funny that you spend like $11 million on 2 goalies and one of them makes 10 and you end up splitting games.
So perfect segue into my next point here. Yeah. You know, you've got Bobrovsky, you know, obviously you're a, you know, $10 million goalie splitting games with Chris Driedger. And Bobrovsky, again, we know he struggled last season. He's sort of been a slow starter here and there in his career, but you know, he's still sitting at a sub 900 save percentage, 894, and a 287 goals against average. And Chris Driedger has a 937 save percentage and a 195 goals against average, and they've played the same amount basically. So, you know, who do you roll with really in that situation? It's like, when is Bobrovsky gonna turn it around, because that's starting to look really, really bad for them.
Yeah, that's god awful. Really bad. How long does that happen until you be like, okay, well, Driedger's a guy, right? Like, he's the guy. Can he prove himself if he's making the same amount of starts and has a better save percentage? Better goals against average. Like, how long does he have to be there until they're like, okay, exactly, well, we got to do something about this Bobrovsky thing, because that's just so much wasted money. You could be like Columbus and have two goalies for less than what you pay Bob that are putting up better numbers than him.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we're one season into his deal now, you know, heading into the second here, and it's already looking like, you know, one of the worst contracts in the league, and it's kind of running out of time to switch that to, you know, kind of break out of that category.
Yeah. I mean, if he was putting up godlike numbers, it would be one thing, but if he's on the cusp of losing his job to the guy who makes 1/10 of what he makes, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, everyone's frustrated with that and just wants him to do well. But, I mean, that's not going to be an easy contract to move.
No. Well, no, because no one is going to have that money. No one has that cap space to take on a $10 million goalie. So Florida's going to end up having to eat a whole bunch of it and not get much out of it. And still, I think still, even with Florida retaining as much as they can, you end up with, you know, a $5 million goalie who is putting up numbers for as a backup. That's not looking too good there. And with the length of the contract too, like, that's, you know, 6 more years. This is, you know, 5 more after this year. This is the 6th last of the contract.
Yeah. And a no movement clause too. So have fun with that, like, over 10% of the cap goalie that you got there. Yeah. Not ideal.
On that note, though, you know, do you put him in that worst contract, one of the worst contracts in the league yet? Is it too early, or is
it? I think he's
in
there right now.
Category now.
Yeah. How he played last year and how he's playing so far this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. For what he's currently bringing the team in value, definitely up there for one of the worst. I would say he's probably got to be top 5.
I have him, yeah. I've got a few jotted down just out of curiosity, and I mean, I've only got 3 other bad ones, being Jeff Skinner, Drew Doughty, and Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, so,
you know, Jeff Skinner has 7 years left at $9 million per season, and he's currently got 1 point in 10 games after his 23-point season last year. Drew Doughty, 7 years left at $11 million per year. And Erik Karlsson, also 7 years left at $11.5 million per year.
Yeah. One that comes to mind is Louis Erickson. He's got 2 more years at $6 million. He hasn't played a game this season for Vancouver.
And on that note, you can throw in, like, James Neal and Milan Lucic. They've got the same type of contract there. Not quite the dollar value. So I didn't put them in this list just because they don't have the dollar value associated with it that these other ones
do. I mean, James Neal is still, you know, way better than Louis Erickson too. He can score still. Whereas Louis
he's situationally
is
effective.
Basically a penalty killer and a press box hero right now. So that one's pretty bad, but I guess it only has 2 more seasons, so it's not the worst. But yeah, I'm with you on that Skinner one. That one's looking really garbage. And, you know, if you can't crack the top 6 in Buffalo, it's pretty rough. But yeah, I wonder what some other bad ones are.
Brent Burns. I threw Phil Kessel on there because he's underperformed the last couple of years, but his contract's almost done. Then you've got the Suter and Parisi contracts in Minnesota that take both of them until they're 40 years old. They still have like 4 more years left on those deals. But at least Suter for sure is still a workhorse for Minnie, so it's not exactly a bad contract. It just might be in a few more years, and Parisi's kind of on the downswing, but still.
Brent Seabrook.
Still a useful player for them, I think.
That's a pretty bad one. 6.8. Signed to the end of 2023-24, and he's also got a no movement. One of those cup contracts.
And he's basically not even
definitely
able to play anymore.
A rough one. I'd say Doughty and Bob are probably my my top two worst ones. Those are bad.
Yeah. You know, I would argue for the present moment that Doughty would be the least bad of those ones because he is still at least useful. The contract itself is not great because it's taking him so late into his career that he's probably going to be getting paid $11 million to sit in the press box. But at least for the moment, he's still a serviceable player. You know, I'd put Jeff Skinner's as worse because Skinner's like playing on the fourth line in Buffalo.
Yeah.
For $9 million a year. And I mean, Bobrovsky's getting overtaken. Like, he's not even, you know, he's not a very serviceable player, putting up a sub 900 save percentage and losing his starting role to Chris Driedger. So at least Doughty's still kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Top line defender.
Bob's is. It's arguably the worst one in the league for sure. That's a rough spot to put the whole franchise in when it's that much money and that much term left. And it's a goalie. Like a defenseman, like at least you have other D-men. But, you know, and you got some cups out of it too, right?
Yeah.
So, that's part of it as well. But.
Exactly.
Yeah, Bobrovsky's. You know, if he was putting up Carey Price numbers, and playing like Carey, it would be one thing. He's not. So, yeah, probably the worst one in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, even then, like, Carey Price making what he does, you know, similar to Bob, has had criticism of his contract a few seasons ago when Price was kind of struggling a bit. You know, that's kind of dissipated now that Price has kind of rebounded and has been good for a couple of years. But, you know, someone like Carey Price, who was still a serviceable goalie at the time, and then comparing it to Bobrovsky, who is definitely not, it's not a good look.
No, definitely not.
So that wraps things up for this time here on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our show on any podcast platform and spread around the good word of ClapperCast. To keep up to date with the latest content, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Hockey Talk.